You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Premier League soccer season is heating up. Turn to Betting Weekly English Premier League on the BetRivers Network for the best bets and analysis for this week's features. Subscribe to Betting Weekly Premier League today, wherever you get your podcasts. If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the BetRivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Hanging and Bagging podcast. My name is Ron Onesti from the Arcata Theater in St. Charles, just outside of Chicago, and we are broadcasting live with Vinny Appice from Deal, Black Sabbath, Last in Line, and, of course, the legendary Carmine Appice from Vanilla Fudge, Cactus, and so many other bands. Thanks for joining us.
Eric Singer, I understand you just got to Las Vegas. Is that how you're coping with all this crap going on?
Yeah, I did. I'm part of the mass exodus out of California. I've noticed a bunch of other people. I think Benny's bandmate.
Yeah, Phil Soussan.
Yeah, Phil Soussan. Phil just moved here recently. Bruce Kulick moved here recently, or within the last year or so, year and a half. But a lot of people I know have moved over here. I just think you get there's a lot more bang for your buck. If you don't mind the heat, it's not as bad as people think, although it's not August yet. But
yeah,
it's 102 today, 106. But today the humidity is 5% humidity. So
wow.
It's 102, but it feels like 85 in L.A.
So what's it like? I mean, here we are mid-June. What's it like as it pertains to, you know, what's the strip look like? I'm talking about, like, customers and people on quarantine. I mean, how alive is Vegas? Has it come back at all yet?
Well, I haven't been to – ironically, I have not even been to the strip not even once since I moved here. I'm not a gambler, and I don't care about. I look at myself. I'm a local, so I live in Henderson, which is south and east, and that's where most of the musicians we know, like Brent Fitz, Todd, Bruce, all these guys, they all live in Henderson. Although I think Phil's in Summerlin or somewhere over that way. He's in a different area.
Yeah,
you know, these guys here, the guy to your your right and above your head, these legendary performers, which I'm honored to be on this show with, of course. I'm sure they're inspirations. You mentioned how many projects Carmine has appeared on. Of course, many too. So many projects. And I just thought it was so cool that you list as your inspiration. Sure, guys like the guys on this show, guys like John Bonham, but also,
Carmine, you see this?
Look at that.
Nice.
Buddy Rich also. And then what I wanted to know was, I know your dad, started off. He was a big band performer, right?
Yeah, my dad was a band leader. When he was younger, right out of high school, his first band he toured with in the 30s. Because my dad was born in 1909. My dad was a lot older.
Wow.
The first band he was in was a Freddie Carlone band out of Cleveland, and Perry Como was the singer. Mm-hmm. And my dad was on double dates when they were like in their 20s.
Wow.
And I think my aunt might have, from what my cousin told me, I think his mom, my aunt might have been with Perry Como. But I can't.
That's really cool. I mean, how about you guys, Carmine, Vinny, your inspiration from the beginning, were they actual rockers from the 50s, 60s? Did you have any inspiration from the 40s, like the Gene Krupa world?
Mine was like Perry Como.
That's funny.
Vinny came up in our era. Like, you guys are the same age, I think. You and Vinny.
I think Vinny's a year older. I'm 62. Vinny's like, I think I was born in 58.
Eric, I changed mine to Celsius. I'm 16.
I like it. Well, here's what I do. Whenever I have a birthday from now on, like next year, when I'm 63, I tell everybody I'm 50 for the 13th time.
There you go.
My influences were Buddy Rich, Gene Krupa, Joe Morello, and Max Roach. So those are like jazz and big band guys. Unlike these two, they probably listened to like John Bonham and myself and those guys, and maybe some Buddy Rich. Now, I know Vinny loves Buddy Rich, and not so much Krupa, but you know, I was like a total Krupa guy and total Buddy Rich. Every time somebody says, "What's your first album you ever bought?" expect me to say the Beatles or something. You know, I say Cooper and Rich. That was my first album.
That's why you're a genius, man.
What was your first album, Eric?
I remember buying 45s in the 60s. So I remember buying, like, I bought Honky Tonk Women.
Wow.
The Rolling Stones, which the B side was Can't Always Get What You Want. The first albums I remember getting, though, in sixth grade, there was this kid that played bass. He was more into like punk, so I remember he bought me for my birthday Iggy Pop Raw Power and Iggy and the Stooges, and I had MC5 Kick Out the Jams, Steppenwolf. I'm trying to remember what else. But then I think what changed it for me is when I heard, you know, I saw you on TV with Ed Sullivan, you know, with Beatles and Vanilla Fudge, all that stuff. So that to me was the real influence. Dave Clark 5 with that Red Sparkle Rogers kit.
Right.
Seeing those bands on TV, I think, had the biggest impact.
Yeah, I was definitely the same way.
That TV was, that was it. Ed Sullivan Show, any variety show, or American Bandstand. And there was another show.
Yeah.
You did it, Carmine. Hullabaloo.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that show.
You actually had Hullabaloo?
Yeah, it's so funny. You keep hanging on with all the stops, and the chicks are still dancing to it.
Hilarious.
There was one of those, I think, in Chester, Lindemeyer, or somewhere in one of the suburbs of Cleveland, there was a Hullabaloo club.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I remember that.
I'm sure you played it.
I think we played it. Yeah, I think we did play it.
All the bands that toured would play. Because I think when you guys started, they didn't have like big concert venues initially. Right.
That was all like ballrooms and clubs, big clubs, like 1,000 seat clubs. Yeah. The Fillmore East was only, the Fillmore West was only maybe, I think, 1,000 people or 1,100 people, something like that. The Fillmore East was big. The Fillmore East was big. It was a theater. It was like the Arcata, you know?
Yeah, we had, there was a lot of that going around. We actually had the International Amphitheater back then. I know you played there. I saw you guys there actually later. Ellis Cooper.
Yeah.
And all that stuff.
We played the Kinetic Playground in Chicago. Jethro Tull, Led Zeppelin, Vanilla Fudge. What a great show. I think I told you about the Spitballs.
you know your old road manager, Paco Zimmer.
Of course.
He told me that you named him Paco after some fisherman. He said you guys went fishing in Mexico, and the fisherman was Paco, and for some reason you started calling him Paco.
Yeah, because he looked like Paco. He had the Mexican mustache. And he looked like, "Hey, Paco, what are you doing, Paco?" And we started goofing with it. And
he told me when you guys had Zeppelin opening for you that he went to the airport to pick them up, and he remembers their gear coming off the turnstile when they first joined the tour.
Yeah. Well, we used to do that. We used to pull the truck. Like when we toured with Hendrix, we had all three or four bands all in one, like 24-foot truck. They used to back the truck right up to the belly of the plane, and we'd pay the sky cap like $100, and he'd load all the stuff. I mean, all the Hendrix's amplifiers, everybody's right into the belly of the plane, and then it would all come out on the turnstiles. It was hilarious.
Yeah, that's
see a Marshall amp, a Marshall bottom coming down the turnstile.
he said he remembered Zeppelin's gear coming off the first time they came to America.
Yep,
that's funny.
Bonzo had one of those Ludwig. It was like gray black, kind of pearl. It might have been a Ringo.
I thought he had Slingerlands originally.
No. Well, maybe they were Slingerland, but I thought they were Ludwigs.
I think he had
Ludwig. Rented. It was a rented kit. It wasn't really their kits, I don't think. It was small, 22 bass drum, and it was like 13 and 13 by 8 rather, and 13 by 9 and 16-16 and a 5-inch snare. And that was it.
Wow.
You guys,
I have a question for Vinny. Vinny, when you first joined Black Sabbath, because I saw you when you were playing with Derringer a couple times with Danny Johnson. You know, I remember you opened for Rush, Cleveland Public Hall, I remember. I had front row center seats. I remember I went down to the box office and got – I literally had the dead center seat front row at Cleveland Public Hall. You guys opened for them. I think it was with Max Webster also maybe. You remember?
Oh, yeah. No. Are you sure it was me?
No, absolutely. Oh yeah, it was definitely. It was the original lineup, the first album lineup with you and Kenny Aronson.
Yeah. I don't even remember. opening for Rush. That's weird.
My question was, you had the kit with the just two countertops off center.
Yeah.
And then you joined Black Sabbath, and you originally were using that small kit in the very beginning, correct?
Right. Right. Yeah, what happened was I went down and played with Sabbath, and I brought the small kit. They were concert toms, so they don't have bottom heads, which makes them seem even smaller. And I went down to play with Sabbath, and they liked the way I play. They said, all right, you're in. And then Tony said, can you play double bass? The kit's too small. And I went, oh. So I started adding some toms, and then started adding aerial toms. And it was because of that where on the last tour I had like 21-piece drum set, a humongous drum set. But, yeah, it looked puny because Tony had four stacks and Geezer had four stacks. It was this little drum set in the middle, you know. But that's the way that whole thing started.
But the first shows, you only used that like five-piece kit, correct?
Yeah, because we had rehearsal 4 days, then we flew off to Hawaii to play a big outdoor stadium show. So those were the only drums I had. Then I called Ludwig. I said, dude, I need another floor, another rack, and then give me some those aerial toms we were talking about. I don't know where they came from, but then I just started adding them, more cymbals. So it had to look the part, you know?
I remember, though, seeing photos in the magazine when you first were in the band. Well, here's the new drummer, and here's his – and he had this small kit. It looked kind of funny.
Now I use the same kit. I use four toms. That's it, man. I love it. I think, it's cool. But we're playing smaller places, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah, similar setup. There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's go to Eric. You know, we got a lot of questions from people, and obviously having you on the show is a real big deal. Obviously, I got a bunch of KISS questions. Don't want to dominate too much with KISS, but by the same token, that's a huge big deal. One of the questions is, what is your relationship now or recently with Peter Criss, in the sense that I know we know the whole transition was challenging, but we also understand that he's a big fan of yours and the job you're doing with KISS.
Who's a big fan?
Peter Criss.
Of me?
Yep. It's documented. He said he's documented saying, look, I'm not thrilled with what happened and how it went down, but Eric Singer's doing a great job in my place.
All right, cool. As we all know, there's politics in a lot of situations. I stay out of the politics. Just like even daily life now, it gets me. I'm not going to win those battles. So, I always looked at it this way. Hey, I just play drums. They needed a drummer. If it wasn't me, it was going to be somebody else. So why not be me? So that's how I look at it. But bottom line is, it's undeniable. Most bands become known for, an original lineup is what creates the chemistry. I'm sure Vinny knows from like that original deal lineup. As much as they changed some members along the way, but I think the chemistry, you know, is undeniable. Just like Rod Stewart, when he had that Rod Stewart band with Carmine, with Do You Think I'm Sexy, that band had a chemistry and a sound. Same thing with that first deal. No offense to anybody else, but once you change the other guys, and once Vinny was gone and Vivian Campbell gone and Jimmy Bain or whatever, I mean, even though the guys that come in are all really good,
the sound, it's not the same.
The sound is created by original bands. And I respect that. And I tell people, my favorite version of Kiss is the original band, because that's what I grew up on.
But why do you think then, speaking to that, the Catman, Peter Criss, you come in, of course, there's a couple other things that went on, but why do you think they didn't give you a new character? Why do you think they just didn't leave Catman, Peter Criss's Catman, and bring somebody else, create another character?
Well, keep it original. They wanted the original look. You know, Gene and Paul. They wanted the original look. I know that.
Well, you have to also think of this. Now, some people use the analogy like, oh, the Yankees have different players. It's still the Yankee pinstripes, and you don't change the uniform. Other people are very emotional about this stuff. And I can respect that. But to me, it's not an emotional thing. They tried other characters with Vinnie Vincent and Eric Carr. And I think – you know, remember, they took the makeup off for a reason, because it wasn't working anymore. When they did Creatures of the Night tour, and Vinnie Vincent came in wearing this, whatever, Egyptian or Ankh warrior, whatever you call it. You know, Paul told me, he said, Eric, when I pull up to the venues, it looked like the place was empty. There was no cars in the parking lot. He said, you know, in an arena, they'd have 2,000 people. He thought, and that was 10 years in, that was their 10th anniversary tour. He goes, I thought it was over. Now, here we are 44 years later. So, you know, they made decisions and choices.
I got a funny story. I got a funny story with Paul. When I was hanging out with Paul in 78, when he turned me on to a Coin management, you know, their management company, I played on his album. We hung out quite a bit. You know, we went to Rod Stewart parties with Paul and all that. So we went to see Angel at the Long Beach Arena. And I had an old Jaguar at the time. We pulled in the backstage, and we're sitting in, we had front row seats after going backstage, and we're sitting there hanging. I see all these fans, like, you know, mulling together, pointing to us, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, wow, they're recognizing Paul, you know. And then they all come up to me and ask me for my autograph, and Paul was right next to me. But nobody knew who he was, because he always had the makeup on.
Yeah.
It was hilarious.
Who is somebody? A question for all three of you guys. I mean, there's so many out there now, but who are the drummers today, or relative to today, that is just gets you guys going, that you really, really love?
That's a good question.
Good question. There's just so many great drummers. I mean, I love Vinny Colaiuta, because I think he's insane. He can play anything, any style of music. He's really like a savant.
But he's not new.
No, he's not. 40,
he's been around 40 years.
Yeah, you're right. He's been around since.
But I'm saying, I agree with you, because now there's really no drum heroes anymore, because there's no guitar heroes and no any of those heroes, because there's no albums. Nobody knows who's on what. You know, that's why the problem is, and there's no rock on the radio like it used to be. You know?
How about a Dave Grohl or someone like that?
He's not new.
He's not new either, but Dave was good. I enjoyed Dave.
Yeah,
but even from the freaking 90s, that's what I'm saying. New, you know, I mean, really, years is very rare.
I actually like Taylor Hawkins, the drummer in the Foo Fighters.
Yeah, Taylor Hawkins is great.
He's great. And he's not new either.
No, hard question.
So I think the answer is we don't know. we don't listen to this new stuff.
It's usually youth. And honestly, there's a lot of young kids that are like 8, 10, 12 years old on YouTube. It's phenomenal. It's very good. And I'm impressed by those. I mean, you got to remember, we didn't have those kind of tools. We didn't have the internet. Yeah. We didn't have, you know, you had to listen to a record and try to figure it out. Or you go to a concert and watch the guy play and go, oh, that's how he's doing it. And nowadays, they can go watch any of us online and figure, oh, I see what he's doing. And they learn it instantly.
I mean, like Pete Biggiani from my group Kodiak, that I'm managing, co-producing and stuff. He's a great drummer. I mean, he studied. He got great feet. Got good hands. He's a great drummer, you know, of today. He's 23 years old, and he rocks. You know who else is really good? I can tell you. Max Weinberg's good. Zach.
Oh yeah,
Zach Wamber. He's really good.
And Slipknot.
I mean, if any, yeah, if anyone, I would say his kid. You know,
Master's, you know, it's wild. He filled in for his dad, for Bruce Springsteen, but his favorite band was Slipknot. You'd never know that the kid playing with Bruce Springsteen when he was like 17 or 18 filling in ends up
with Slipknot. I know, right?
Crazy.
Because he's got good hands and really fast feet. Max turned me on to some videos of his like a couple of weeks ago. And Max lives 10 minutes from where I moved to. You know, hopefully we'll hang out a little bit. But he's, you know, he told me that I influenced him, and it went down the line. He said, I influenced my kid. I said, well, I influenced my kid too, Vinny.
You know, you guys are getting
Hey, Eric, did you ever want to figure out a drum lick when we were growing up and you played the record on slow?
Yeah, you'd slow it down. Or sometimes you'd take your finger and kind of drag it, slow it down, holding your finger slightly on the pedal.
Yeah.
Try to slow it down and take it out.
Those were the tools we had. Like, what did he play there and put it on 16 and a half?
I never did that. I had to learn real speed.
Yeah.
Well, you were also there for the time. You were writing the parts. You were one of the ground floor guys. So in all fairness and all respect, you know, I always tell Carmine, he's like he's a Gene Krupa of rock. Gene Krupa was a guy that was an originator back in to the big band era, you know, Buddy Rich, all those guys, that was their hero. Me growing up, it was, you know, it was Carmine. And, you know, like Carmine, like Derek Sherinian always says, Carmine's the last of the great Mohicans. He's, you know, because Ginger Baker and Keith Moon, Bonham.
Mitch Mitchell.
They're all passed on.
Yeah.
Now we lost Neil as well. And I noticed Ron's enjoying us. He's got a big smile on his face.
I love it, man. I tell you, man, I can't believe I'm on with you guys and with Eric to boot. I mean, I'm talking about a cherry on top of a drumstick.
I'm reading a Rolling Stone book about Charlie Watts, and the guy in there is mentioning Keep on Knocking by Little Richard. Did you hear the intro to that?
Oh, yeah. It's rock and roll.
It's rock and roll. It's a little different, but it's the coolest groove, like the way the feel. It's four bars, but it seems like it's off at the end, you know.
Yeah. Because it comes in on the end. It starts on the end.
Yeah.
The actual riff starts on the end, which is why everybody gets it turned around in their head.
Right.
Really cool.
This was the original, and it's a little different than what Bonham did, but the definite, that's where he got the idea.
Coolest stuff, man. I listened to that when I was a kid. Your brother Frank used to buy those records.
Yeah, you know? But that intro older, he was older, the coolest.
And I listened to that intro, and I copped that intro when I was a kid, you know, because that was one of the only rock things to listen to. There was that. There was Teen Beat, Cozy Powell, Cozy Cole. Team Topsy Part 2, Let There Be Drums, and Wipeout. Those are the only rock things that were like interesting for a drummer, you know. The rest of the stuff was crap, you know.
Yeah.
I would love to hear you play the opening to Wipeout. That would be so cool.
All right.
We played it once at our show.
There you go.
So you guys have so many projects. Eric, you played over 75 albums. I don't have the time to count the albums and stuff. Carmine, many of you have been on. And it was a question for me. How do you guys keep track of those things? You have all 75 albums somewhere. Where do you guys keep that kind of stuff and keep it straight?
Wow. I saw it. The last time I saw all the albums that I did, it was in Drumhead magazine. When me and Vinny were on a cover and they have the article and then they list all your albums and they listed all the albums. I said, wow, I didn't know how I played on that many albums. It was only 50. It was only 50 at the time. Now it might be 60. But Eric, you beat me out.
But don't forget, when people are doing Carmine, in all fairness, if you played on one track on an album, they count that.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah.
So if you're on a compilation album, they count that. You're on
song. Oh, right. Okay. Well, if you count compilation albums, I'm way up.
They count it as like appearances, if you will.
Yeah.
Right.
Many of them, man.
By the way, Vinny, you're playing one of my friends I just spoke to, this guy Frank Amato. He's a singer-producer from Cleveland. I guess you're playing on some tracks for some guy that he's producing out of Cleveland. I just spoke to him because they're here in Vegas visiting, so I'm going to meet him for dinner later tonight. But some guy named Joey something, I think you
played. Yeah. Tell him I said hi. And, I got a studio in my house. I love, you know, the stuff's right, the music's right. I record it myself. I'm the engineer. I'm a wireless keyboard, the whole thing. And I get to experiment with all the different mics. And, like, I just found this this little mic here, the Sony. Look at this thing. Stereo. And I plugged it in. I haven't used it in years. And I listened to it. It sounded incredible. So I'm going to hook it up to my interface, put it probably here on the desk as a room mic, see what it sounds like. Yeah. Yeah,
Vinny's building me a computer to put in my drum room, which is and we have a guest house here. I got the drums and a gym in there, and that's it. It's like my man cave. And he's building me the computer to hook it up so I can record here as well.
Nice.
Vinny's a computer tech as well, besides being a great drummer.
I'm a Windows guru.
Yeah.
Keep that. How come it takes you so long to get on this program and we start this thing every week?
What was that? I'm sorry.
I said that if you're a guru, how come it takes you so long to get on this program every week?
Because we're changing programs all the time. So this is the best program now.
I like this one.
This is good.
You've been
breaking up. We don't know why, but. It's probably your internet connection. You're not in your house at the normal place that we normally see.
No, it's the speakeasy. You said it last week. I left my house. This is my speakeasy in St. Charles. We're down. Right. We're closing the doors.
So the internet connection might be a little weird, but this system came from Eric's friend, Stefan, that I did an interview with, and Derek set me up with it. And then those guys said, you got to get Eric on. That's why we got Eric here today. And anyway, because of Stefan, we have this new system now. Because we did this system with his, and I said, wow, this is so much better than what we're doing.
It really is.
Yeah, it's and so much easier to hook up.
Yeah,
you just hook up, you get on.
Eric, I heard about this. What is this about you being a deputized police officer in Texas? How did that all come to be?
I got a badge. You want to see my badge?
Yeah.
Where is it?
I'm gonna show it to you. Hold on.
No. What city?
In Texas. I don't know the city.
Oklahoma City?
No, I don't know the city. It's in Texas, though.
Oh, Texas. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
The police are not very well liked right now.
Yeah, no. God bless them. God bless our police officers.
That's what I said.
Right.
God bless them.
These
people are crazy.
They're walking in
the world's uniforms on.
That's all because of the news sensationalizing it. They make it worse than it is, and they're destroying the country.
Can you see it?
Hey, all right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's kind of getting reflection. Hold on.
No, that's cool. We see it.
There it is.
Wow. It says Corporal Singer somewhere.
And you're a corporal, too?
Yeah.
Wow. How'd you become a corporal so quick?
Honorary. Actually, you can deputize a police captain or whatever. You can deputize anybody. Tommy Thayer, I think, got deputized as a marshal or one of the in Tennessee or something.
Oh, wow.
Tell us about how the Cures came about.
That's easy when you're in KISS, see?
Hey, I got one.
In KISS?
I got one from South America.
There you go.
Do you? Yeah. Really? Is that real?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't have my name on it. I don't know if it works or anything.
I mean, the way it worked was the one guy.
All I have is my garage door open here.
There you go. That's all you need. actually, a friend of mine named Ariel from Ariel Javier, who's on the police force there in Wharton, which is I think it's about 40, 50 miles outside of Dallas or Houston. Try to remember. I think it's Houston. So anyways, I'm into watches, wristwatches, and this guy's a.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
He's a moderator on one of these watch sites, and I became friends with him that way. And when we played there, he knew I was, you know, he knows the everyone in our band's always been very supportive of the military, and police and all that. So we've always just, you know, civil servants. We're very supportive of that and those causes and charities for that type of stuff. You know, Tommy Thayer, our guitar player, his dad was a brigadier general in the in the military. Nice. In the army. So we do a lot of stuff because of that.
I collected some watches from back in the 80s, and I still found my Derringer first LED about 1976.
Really?
You know, red, yeah. I put a new battery in, and it was all – it worked a bit. Then it went all nuts, you know. But I had some original Japan watches, Solar, one of the first – Solar watches. Yeah, I used to collect them all, buy them.
How many do you have now, Eric? I know you've been collecting for a long time. How many do you have now?
I've never counted, but I know it's probably close to 300 or something like that.
Wow. Yeah.
But that's he really collects watches.
But that's nothing. I mean, Alice Cooper has about 500. He's always been really into it.
Really? Wow.
Hey, Eric, what time is it? I don't know.
I looked at 431 and 51. Hey, Vinny, I have a question for you. Did Carmine have anything to do with you meeting Rick Derringer and getting in Derringer, or how'd that happen?
The way that happened was the band I was with in Brooklyn when I was 16, it was a four horn player band, you know, really good band. And we got managed by the Record Plant Studios in New York City. Jimmy Iovine was our producer. He was a good friend. So he brought us in there, and we used to rehearse there all the time. We had our own room. It was the coolest thing. And in there, we met John Lennon, and we wound up doing some stuff with him. And then we did demos, and Rick was there one day, and he heard the demo. And he asked Jimmy, who is that? And they said, that's Carmine's brother, Vinny, playing drums in his band. He goes, wow. Then I met up with him, and he said, give me a number. I'm going to be putting a band together. I went, yeah, here's my number. So it was a great place to network when we met Aerosmith there, Jay Giles' band, everybody recorded there. So it was cool.
And when he called up for Vinny, he called the house. Vinny still lived at home.
My mother's house.
My mother answered the phone, and she goes, hi, Mrs. Appleseed. This is Rick Derringer, I'd like to talk to Vinny. So my mother says, oh, no, you want to talk to Carmine?
So, really?
Yeah. So he goes, no, I want to talk to Vinny. And she kept thinking that he was calling to me, but asking for the wrong guy. And then finally, she couldn't believe that, you know, you got Rick Derringer at the time, who was big, was calling for Vinny, like Vinny was still in high school, you know. And it was pretty funny. She told me that. I laughed, you know.
That's great. No, I was wondering. I thought maybe that you knew him, and you said, "Hey, why don't you get my brother to play?" So I always wondered how it happened.
Well, I did know him, but I didn't ask him to bring Vinny in. You know, like he
actually, Carmine never really helped me get in these bands. You know, it was all.
It was always just Carmine's brother.
I was Carmine's brother.
That might have helped a little, but I never physically called anybody and said, hey, take my brother in. You
know? I was Carmine's brother till I got older and better and kicked his ass.
Hey, guys, we'll be right back after a few messages from our sponsors. Welcome back to our Hanging and Banging podcast. I'm Ron Onesti here with Vinny Appice and, of course, the legendary Carmine Appice. Well, you can see here when you guys do your Drum Wars show, again, as I say every week, one of my favorite shows live we have by my theater here, seeing you guys up against each other, almost trying to one-up each other. I don't know how choreographed or scripted that is, but that's the funnest part of watching butt heads.
It's a lot of freedom, because sometimes we'll end the song and then Vinny will look at me and take a four, and like, it's basically he's telling me, let's do some fours. And we would do them, and then we'd end the song again, you know, but it's really a lot of fun. You never saw it, Eric? Did you ever see it?
No.
See, that's our new drum sets there. See our new drum sets?
Oh, that's great.
It's in the trunk.
It is a small kid.
It fits in a mini car.
Is that from New York?
That the drum kits was a theater in Connecticut.
That was a benefit show.
Yeah.
But, You guys together, when you're on that tour, it's not really a tour because I know you do a lot of one-offs and that kind of thing, but are you guys literally, how much of that is scripted and how much of that is that you're just kind of making it happen, trying to one-up each other?
It's probably 70% scripted and then, you know, whatever happens, happens, you know. I try to make something happen if nothing happened by throwing some loops in there, you know.
Yeah.
And making it happen. What happened to the questions from the viewers?
So I got a couple here. What do you think about, what's his name, Romero and the new Rainbow? I guess this is for you, Vinny. He's a vocalist.
Who?
His name is Romero. He is in the new Rainbow. And they'd like to know what your opinion is of him. One of our customers here looking for questions.
I'm sorry, that doesn't ring a bell of who he is.
Okay. All right, we got another.
Richie Blackmore in the last year or two put a new version of Rainbow together and that singer that he's asking you about.
Yes.
I never heard him.
I never heard of him either.
The answer to the question. But for Eric, I mean, how real is this whole, this is the last hurrah for Kiss? How real is that, you think?
I believe it's real. I think, you know, you got to remember, Gene will be 71 in August.
Jeez, really?
Now, what 71-year-old guy, think about when you were a kid, that would be your grandfather, that's putting on that costume, breathing fire. And spitting blood and flying up in the air. I mean, now people probably spit up blood for other reasons, but the point is, he's, you know, the fact he still does it is kind of crazy.
Yeah, I'm 73, and I totally get it. You know, I mean, it's like I get off my drums now after a drum solo, and my heart's like at 130, you know, beats per second, and I'm like a minute, and I'm like, you know, almost dizzy. You know what I'm saying? So it's got to be. It's got to be hard to just walk around in those boots when you're that age, you know, because it's hard enough to walk around in comfortable shoes.
Sandals.
There you go. Nice. Yeah. I got Skechers. All my shoes are Skechers now. They're so comfortable. They're much better. We just took a walk around, about a mile walk around the circle here where we live with the dog, and I couldn't do it in any other shoes. I tell you the truth.
I'm right there. I finally said, "Oh, I have to relent and wear New Balance shoes." And they're made for walking. And it's ironic. When I first met Tony Iommi, Tony Iommi always likes to go walking after he eats dinner. Yeah. Right? Always goes for long walks. And he was the one that I remember. I met him in 1984. Late 84, early 85. And I remember he always wore New Balance. Unless he went out, he wore pointed, like, you know, Cuban heel boots going to a club. But when he, during the day, and he'd go walking in these New Balance sneakers. And he was very religious about doing that every day. He and Jeff Nichols, they always would go walking, I remember. And so, you know, they're not exactly the most fashionable looking type of shoes, but they're intended to be, you know, for walking. And the point is, I finally said, okay, I'm old. I got to wear them because it helps. It really makes a difference.
Well, Eric, you know, Alice Cooper is about 72, 73 years old. He's still rocking and rolling, having a great time. But let me ask you now, you know, you're obviously got some experience at the time when you got into Kiss. You know, your first big thing basically was Lita Ford, Alice Cooper, all this great stuff that you have. But how was it when you first got that call that you got the gig in Kiss, one of the biggest bands in the world? How big of a thrill was that for you?
Well, I had done Paul Stanley's solo tour in 1989, so that's how I met him. I was actually in New York recording a record with this band called Badlands, and one of the guys that we were managed by Paul O'Neill, who managed Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Yep. And one of the guys that he represented, this guy Dennis St. John, this bass player, he just said, he asked Paul O'Neill, hey, what's Eric doing? Because Paul Stanley needs a drummer. And he said, oh, he's done with this record. He's just going home. He's got to sit around for a few months. So he told Paul about me, and I went over to the Kiss office, which they were living in New York at the time, and I just met with him. And then that night, we were at the record plant in New York, and I was flying home to L.A. the next morning, and Jason Flom was our A&R guy. And Jason Farm came in and said, hey, Eric, I just saw Paul Stanley at the China Club. He told me you're playing drums in his solo tour. I'm like, really? I didn't even So that's how I met Paul. And then after that, Paul was moved to L.A. And sometimes they asked me to play on demos, Kiss demos, because okay. Eric Carr didn't live in L.A. By this point, in 89, Paul and Gene and Bruce Kulick were all living in L.A. So when they would do demos, they'd all do them like kind of separately. And they'd go and just like, you know, have their friends and say, hey, like Tommy Thayer was playing on demos for Gene and Paul back then as well. And so they just, Paul asked me to come in and play on a bunch of demos for Hot in the Shade album. But I didn't play on the record, just demos. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I kind of developed a relationship that way. And so when Eric Carr got ill, when they went to do the Revenge album, Paul called me up again and said, hey, Eric's sick. Can you come in and play on some stuff for a record? And so then he passed away, unfortunately. And then it kind of just it happened to be the right place, right time.
How much did you have to deal with Doc McGee at the time?
Doc was not the manager at that time.
No, he wasn't the manager, yeah. It was
Larry Mazur.
Bill LaCoyne.
Larry Mazur.
Oh, I didn't know Larry managed him.
Larry was managing the band, and then after that, then there was no manager for a while, and then they didn't get Doc until they did the reunion in 96.
I know 98. He's really bringing them back. And then you know, you talked about earlier when they were doing some touring and then the arenas were not getting filled up. I guess he's credit with really not only bringing them back with that reunion, but also getting them over, what, 2,500 those promotional deals with, you know, with the logos and the dolls and just all the merchandising.
Oh, they went crazy. They went crazy. They went crazy with it all again.
That's when they brought Paco in. At that point.
Yeah, Paco came in to be the accountant. Well, Paco had been one of Doc's guys with Bon Jovi, Scorpions.
Right, exactly, yeah.
He's one of Doc's guys, you know. Yeah. But I think Paco's kind of retired pretty much.
Now. He's retired. Yeah, I talked to him a couple of weeks ago. He's retired. He just got over having some sickness. Maybe he's okay.
Yeah. I love Paco. He's funny guy.
You know, those years, if you talk about merchandising, the essence and the science and the art of merchandising, fan merchandising, you know, you got Doc, you got Kiss. I mean, there was no band like it.
Yeah, but originally it started with a coin. A coin's a guy that really, he was a master of press. He was a master at merchandise. And those guys, you know, they were the first band to really, since the Beatles, right, to go merchandise crazy, you know?
Yep.
You know, a lot of people don't realize the Beatles had a lot of toys and merchandise back in the 60s, but they weren't really big on it, and they didn't promote it. But anyone that might remember, probably maybe 10 or 15 years ago or something, at the Hard Rock Hotel in Las Vegas, they used to have some display cases, and they had all the Beatles toys. There was like a toy plastic Ringo Starr drum. They had comb and a hairbrush and a mirror, talcum powder. They had, the Beatles
had it all.
They had all that stuff before Kiss.
And Elvis, too, another one.
but rock bands like, you know, Vanilla Fudge, Cactus, BBA, doing no merchandise. We never sold merchandise.
I remember
no T-shirts, nothing. I remember being on tour with Jeff Beck and BBA, and I just released my drum book, you know, and I said, let's sell the drum book at the gigs, you know, and we sold some of them at the gigs. We carried them around and sold them at the gigs. And that was like unbelievable. Wow, we sold my drum books at a gig, you know, but then not until I was in Rod Stewart, which was like 3 or 4 years later. Then everybody was doing merchandise then, you know. And then I think Alice Cooper jumped on it after Kiss got big with it. And then there was only a few people that were doing it. And now, you know, it's a staple. Everybody has to do it. Those meet and greets that everybody did with this pandemic, I mean, those are all gone now. Forget about it. I mean, when the gigs come back, it's going to be really weird.
Yeah. I agree. It's going to be interesting to see how people deal with all that going forward.
Yeah, believe me, very interesting. I stay up awake every night thinking about it, how it's going to happen, how it's going to work.
Yeah,
Eric, it's a question I ask everybody. It's a personal question. I mean, for me personally, it's a curiosity. I've asked these guys before. You got this great career. You've met so many kings and queens and princesses and princes of rock and roll and humanity. What is something that you have that is your most favorite, most valuable, most treasured piece of memorabilia or a gift or something that you, if the place has got to spin on fire right now, you would grab before you ran out of your house?
Oh, I don't know about memorabilia. I probably want, like, my dad's watch, you know, because
watch.
Well, the only, well, I had an older brother, but he passed away in 1994. So, you know, the oldest son usually gets the father's watch and that kind of a thing, you know, old tradition. But my brother, before he passed away, I remember I was he lived in New York, and I was visiting him, and he said, "Here, you want this?" And he gave me the watch, and because he goes, "I don't really ever wear it," and so it was ironically, I ended up with the watch, and he passed away shortly after. So I'm glad that otherwise it had probably gotten stolen or who knows what would have happened. Yeah. So that's a fundamental, you know, connection thing.
So not only is it a gift from your father, but it's a gift from your brother as well.
Yeah, I mean, I have my dad's violin. I have his saxophones because he played saxophone and violin. He was a band leader. So I have his instruments. So those are kind of
really
cool. Yeah.
My grandfather was a virtuoso in the mandolin. There's actually a school in Italy, in Florence, named after him. But I've got his baton from 1910. I'm so excited about, you know.
Oh, his conductor's baton?
Yeah, he was a conductor, yeah.
Nice, nice.
Carmine and Vinny, did your father play music? Was your dad a musician?
Nope.
No.
Not at all.
Yeah, he played saxophone.
Oh, he did?
But he was awful.
Yeah, he wasn't a musician.
What about
you? Now, my older brother was a doo-wop singer, and he started playing guitar, just taking lessons, which he showed me when I picked it up quicker than he did. And then he stopped playing and stopped singing. And he became the world-famous spice salesman. He would sell spices to, like, Costco by the dump truck, by the truckload and stuff like that. But he... When Vinny was growing up, Vinny could tell you, he was like, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years old. We used to have like doo-wop group rehearsals in the living room, and I would have band rehearsals in the living room. And he was running around as a little kid being exposed to all this stuff. So my mother was always singing, and you know, she'd be washing dishes, the radio on, singing all the time. Right, Vin? She'd always be singing along.
So it's always music.
Vinny, yes, do you sing? Do you sing, Vinny?
I sang a little bit on some of the records, backgrounds, but I didn't really get into it.
Carmine's really got a great voice. I always told Gina Paul, you should have got Carmine to be the drummer to replace Peter back then.
I agree.
I'm serious. You would have been perfect because you sang.
I know.
Because you sang.
I talked to Paul, and they said they wanted to get somebody without a name.
He said without a name on his bass drum.
Did he say that?
No. No, but yeah, I agree. But you sing really great, man. I saw you guys, when I saw you when I came to see Kiss, and you sang Beth, I was blown away. I said, my God. And you played piano.
Great job.
I didn't know you played piano, and your voice is awesome.
I didn't know either.
Just like Peter. Yeah, Peter, I didn't know he had a great voice. He has a great voice.
He's got that cool whiskey, that's, you know, the tone. He's got the cool tone.
Yeah, the tone. Like my voice is now, I have something on my vocal cords, some mucus that won't leave. I have a very gritty voice when I sing now, but I lost my top end, you know, my highs, which I don't like, you know. But like when I do it, Fudge, I sing People Get Ready, I have to watch where I go. Where I normally would go, you know, I'll crack if I do that with this crap on my voice. But I like the way it sounds now. I sound like the Godfather.
Yeah, I know. You are.
I don't think a lot of people realize how good Carmine sings.
Yeah. Well, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Really great.
I love it.
I've said it to Gina Paul a bunch of times. I said, you should have got Carmine to be the drummer back then.
Yeah, I did talk to Paul about it back then because I was managed by a coin. And I talked to a coin as well, you know. And, yeah, they said, well, we want to get a new guy, you know, a new look. They got Eric with a new facial thing. So my question to you, Eric, right now, you have to shave to put the makeup on?
Oh, yeah, of course. But whenever I went on a tour, I always grow facial hair.
Yeah.
So but speaking of that,
you know, do you know that when they auditioned drummers, you know, I think it came down to Bobby Rondinelli and Eric Carr.
Yeah, well, Bobby was one of my students.
Yes. Bobby was one of the ones that they were undecided between, but I think because Eric could sing.
Yeah, that makes a difference. It makes a difference, yeah.
I don't think Bobby sang. And
No, he didn't sing, no.
Paul, I think Paul said if Bobby would have been able to sing, he would have probably gotten the gig.
Yeah. Hmm.
He told me that.
And Bobby was one of my students. He played like me, so he should have got me.
I know.
Hey, but speaking about getting we never mentioned the fact that you were discovered, Eric. And I distinctly remember you at the Carmine Appice Drum Off 1984 when Lita was there. And that's where she saw you.
Well, actually, the way it happened was this girl named Brenda Holiday, she was a penthouse pet. And they were doing these videos for Playboy called Women in Rock. And Cheryl Rickson, who was Penthouse Pet of the Year, and a bunch of Playboy girls were all doing these videos. Matt Sorum was in one of them, I remember.
Right.
A bunch of other guys that ended up in bands. So some girl, she called me up and she goes, I got your number from Carmine. I saw you at the drum off last night, and Carmine gave me your number. I'm doing this video. Will you be in the video? And I said, okay, cool. So she hired the guitar player from Steeler, the guy that replaced Yngwie, this guy named Kurt James, and this bass player from New York named Ray Marzano. So we rehearsed at this rehearsal place in North Hollywood called the Rock House. Black Sabbath used to rehearse there. Did you know that, Vinny, that place?
No, what was it called?
The Rock House.
Hmm.
And it was back in an industrial area off of Vineland. So the bass player owned that place. And when I went there, we went there to rehearse to learn the song. And he said to me, hey, Lita needs a drummer. Randy Castile quit. She doesn't know it yet. But she, he's coming back from... she's over in England with Tony Iommi. She's engaged to him, and she's coming back. And so when Lita came back, she did a cattle call. I auditioned, and I got the gig. And then 6 weeks later, we're opening for Rat at Long Beach Arena on New Year's. And Rat had just went to their full big stage playing arenas. And Carmine's there with one of his wives. I remember it was Angela.
Right.
She had a long fur coat. I'll never forget this. And I walk up to Carmine. I go, hey, Carmine. He goes, hey, man, how you doing? What are you doing there? I go, I'm playing with Lita tonight. And you go, oh, and I'll never forget. You go, oh, that's awesome. And you go, no, Eric, that's so cool. You go, that's what it's all about. That's why those drum offs, this is what's supposed to happen. It's so people can get a break. Somebody could. And I got discovered at Carmine's drum contest. That was six weeks after the contest, I'm playing Long Beach Arena.
See, that's where your influence, Carmine. Your influence.
Oh, yeah. I said, thank you, Carmine, always.
Yeah, that's awesome. As Lita always told me, she goes, I found through your drum off, I found Eric, you know?
It's true. That's how I got discovered. True. And I remember it was very intimidating. Carmine, you did it at the Palace, and you got up and jammed with Jakey Lee and Phil Chen.
We did Bo Diddley.
Pardon me?
We did Bo Diddley.
Oh, I didn't remember what you played. I just remember you jammed. And then the judges, I'll never forget, I was very intimidated. You had two kits, a single bass kit and a double bass kit. So if you know, for those that play double bass. And the guy that won it that night was Sal Rodriguez, who plays with War. He still plays with War.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah. Anyway.
The guy that won the big one that had Buddy Rich, his Sonny Emery, he played with Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah. You know? And John LuPonte.
John LuPonte, he's like a monster player.
Oh, yeah, monster. Yeah. And so I'll never forget, I'm playing Carmine, and you had, I remember the judges were like Bruce Gary. And I'll never forget, I'm playing and like sitting right 6 feet, like 6 feet away from me, right next to me is Steve Smith. So that's pretty intimidating. It was. And but it was a great experience, and that was a cool thing. And I remember the best story about it, though. Carmine, you sent a tape into KNAC, I think it was, or KLOS.
Right, yeah, KLOS.
Cassette tape. And from that, they picked, like, I think, 35 guys and 15 girls. And girls in the boys category. So they did it at the parking lot in the old Guitar Center in Sherman Oaks.
Right, that was a semifinals.
Semifinals.
And that's where Steve Adler was there.
That's why I want to tell the story. So you had Myron Graubacher was a judge. I think Mark Craney.
Yeah.
These were the judges. So Carmine said to everybody, you know, if you like somebody, you know, audience participation is part of it. You like somebody, you got to, you know, make it known. Don't be shy and all that. Well, Stephen brought all his family and all of his friends, and they're all cheering for him. Well, Stephen didn't make the finals. And no. So he's crying. I'll never forget this. I'm standing right next to Carmen on the sidewalk on Ventura Boulevard, and Stephen's crying, and Stephen's mother's coming up, and she's kind of not really berating Carmen, but she's saying, how come my friend Stephen didn't win? He's not included. All these people were cheering for him. The crowd loved him, and Carmen's trying to be very gracious. He goes, well, you know, that's just one aspect of it. That's part of it, and blah, blah, blah. So this is 1984. You know, 3 years later, the guy's in one of the biggest bands in the world.
And then he was with Slash that day.
Yes.
Slash was there too.
That was why.
I remember that day because I called him Stephen Alder. Because it was spelled wrong on my list. You know, it was like A-L-L-D-E-R. So I said, Stephen Alder. And they said, no, it's Adler. I said, oh. You know, it was misspelled. So I remembered that. And then Stephen told me that himself, that you know, I mispronounced his name and he was at that drum off. But he didn't tell me about the crying. You told me about the crying.
I remember he was all upset and crying. He was bawling his eyes out. And his mom's like, you know, the Jewish mother. Why isn't my son in there? You know, it was great.
You had fun day. Roses.
Those were the days.
Yeah, those are fun days.
How about the days coming up? Eric, we got to be winding down here in just a minute. But, you know, besides on the horizon, besides, you know, obviously the KISS train that you're on, obviously. But any ideas or any concepts of going or thoughts of going back to some ESP stuff with our buddy Johnny Karabi or any of that kind of thing going on?
No, I mean, I haven't done that in a long time because we would just do that for fun and we'd go play in Europe, or we went to Australia before as well, Europe a couple of times, because over there, for some reason, you can go over there and do those kind of things and actually make money. In America, it's very difficult. Yeah. The market's just not the same. Over there, people have always been, I feel, more appreciative and of just music and the arts. Kids are brought up in school to appreciate, you know, classical music, dance, theater, all that kind of stuff. They don't do that in America. We have no culture. We have no culture here in that regard.
Benny, how about you? What do you got coming up on the horizon that we should be looking for? I know you're working on some new music, some old stuff. What's happening on the horizon for you?
Well, Nick, we're working on the third Last in Line album, and gigs is pushed back till end of November, December. And I'm supposed to go to Europe in September to do this Black Sabbath tour that I do. It's just me and a really good band, and we play all the Sabbath songs that I'm on and some of the old stuff. It's done really well in the past. So I'm supposed to go there in September.
Who's the singer?
It's a singer from Italy. The whole band's from Italy.
Okay.
And it's really good.
Bring him over here, cousin.
I've done them here, too. I've done them in Ohio 3 times already, and it's done really well. You know, we play all the Mob Rules stuff and Heaven and Hell, which I didn't play on, but The Humanizer, all that stuff, and then the classics, a couple of Dio songs, and it works good. And then I'm supposed to go to South America again, so we'll see if it holds up, you know, if they're ready. If not, it'll be next year.
I'm looking forward to having you back here at Last in Line, that's for sure, man.
Yeah. Vinny, I got to ask you, have you or Carmine, have you heard that singer, that kid Dino Jalusic?
No.
You should go check him out. That kid can sing. I'm telling you, this kid, he does Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Yeah.
His name is Dino Jalusic, J-E-L-U-I-S-I-C. Go check him out. This kid is a great, I'm telling you, there ain't many good singers that come along once in a while like that. This kid can sing. He can sing that Dio stuff. All that Mob Rules and Heaven and Hell era stuff.
Yeah.
He does a cover of a Badlands song, and he can nail the Ray Gillen shit, which Ray had like a super high range.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, this kid, Vinny, check him out. You will love him. I'm telling you, this kid's good.
I'll check him out. Yeah.
He's perfect for anyone that's doing that style of music. This guy's perfect. And he looks great too.
Cool. Dino, right?
Dino Jalusic with a J.
J. Jalousie. Carmine, I know you got a bunch of things going on, of course. Always producing, always working on it. You're working on Cactus. What else we got coming up?
Well, it's pretty much the Cactus album, and we have a new deal for Vanilla Fudge, but the pandemic screwed it all up. So we're waiting for that to end so we can start recording. And pretty much that's it. You know, I was doing my Rod Experience show, which is like what Vinny does at Sabbath. I did all the great Rod songs that we used to play with Rod when he used to really rock. And we had some of those shows booked by Steve Love that put this thing together that we're doing today. And so who knows?
But Who's the singer? This
guy's name is Rick St. James. And I talked to another guy yesterday. Yeah, I don't know if you remember Paul Warren. Paul Warren, Eric, played Paul Warren in Explorers in the 80s. He played with Rod for 14 years. He played with a lot of different people. So I have him in the group. And now he had some other guy that does a Rod show call me yesterday and him and want us to play with him in his Rod show. So we'll see what happens, you know. But, you know, I just, for me, at my age, I just want to get out and play. It doesn't really matter. Yeah, you know, whatever it is, if it's heavy, if it's rock, if it's, you know, anything but ballads, right, Vinny?
Yeah, no love songs, no unplugged shit, no ballads.
I used to have that on my first website.
It's a Vinny Appleseed, the loudest drummer in rock. And then I'd put no love songs, no unplugged shit, no problem. And Carmine would say,
no gigs.
We got to thank you guys very much. We got to, all of us have to thank Steve Love, of course, Ben Wheeler, our producer. Yeah. He's been working really hard making it happen. Ben, thank you so much. You're doing such a great job for us. I'm lucky enough to be with these legends, Carmine Appice, Vinny Appice, and our special guest tonight, Eric Singer. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Really,
hey, you got to thank Stefan. You got to thank Stefan for that. What's the name of the show, Eric?
Yeah, Stefan Adika. It's Coffee Talk. Coffee Talk on YouTube. There's a channel, Coffee Talk with Stefan.
And Coffee Talk.
Adika, Coffee Talk.
He's the guy. He's the guy who turned us on to this this program that really works so much easier, right? Everyone.
Yeah, yes. But oh, Coffee Talk's on.
Here we are.
He's on Monday through Friday, eight to about 10 in the morning. West Coast time, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, Vinny's gonna do his show there.
Everybody who's watching, everybody's enjoying this. You should like it, share it, tell your friends. We want to get this out here because we're doing this every week. We're doing it with Carmine. We're doing it with Vinny. I'm honored to be with these guys. I'm Ron Onesti. Once again, Eric, thanks for being with us.
Yeah.
Thank you guys.
I'll call you, Eric.
Check out that guy Dino, Vinny. You're gonna love
it. I might see you in Vegas soon. I might move too.
I'm here. Okay, look me up. I'll see you guys. Have a nice weekend.
Okay, you too. Bye, guys. Bye, everybody listening.
Bye, everybody. Have a great week.
Maryland sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Longshots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Longshots off-track betting. Go to BetfredSports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.